From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
Hey there, and thank you for tuning in for another episode of PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill. Sarah Sinclair is out today. I may be joined by my cat, Jack, who likes to yell at me sometimes while I record things conveniently. So if you hear a little chirp in the background, he just wants to talk some disc golf, which is what we're going to do today on the show. I'm going to go solo. Hopefully Ricky Wysocki is going to take some time out of his day to join us and talk about his big win at the Ledgestone Insurance Open. That was the big story of the weekend. Ricky Wysocki and Katrina Allen taking their first wins on the pro circuit since the San Francisco Open last year, 2019. For two great champions that they are in the game, my goodness, it feels like it was just such a long time. I mean, that is a long time. And for those two to have that much of a drought, you know, really, really interesting. Obviously, Ricky came up short at Worlds last year, as did Katrina in the same area. She's had some issues on the putting green. He was battling Lyme disease. So kind of interesting to see them both have their wins come at the same time after their last wins came at the same time. So pretty cool. Let's just get straight into it. Let's talk Ledgestone. I would say beyond the main Ricky story and Kat story, the courses, you know, brought a lot of talk. There was obviously Northwood the first 2 days on the MPO side. Is a fantastic wooded course. I personally enjoy it a lot. I saw a bit of chatter about the par 5, hole 12, which is, you know, it's a tremendous hole. It's a 1,050 feet. So it's a beast of a hole. Plays as a par 5. The average scoring for it was almost two shots over par for the weekend. And this is one of those things where there were some people chirping on disc golf Twitter about, man, this is just not a good hole. Other people saying, yeah, it is a good hole. It really just depends on how you tackle it. I tend to fall in that camp. Having played the hole, having been there for Worlds last year, I think it's a fantastic hole. The elevation change is drastic. It is a very demanding technical hole. The tee shot's very demanding. But really, I think you can see people play it. You know, if you play it straight and play it safe, just up the gut and play it for par, you're going to do fine. It's when you maybe get a little more aggressive than you should that hole bites you a little bit. Now, my hope is that there will be some work done to alleviate some of the backups that we saw with it, but that's not really my area of expertise. I think that's something we can work on with, you know, some tweaks to tee times and things like that. I think that's fixable. And then on the other side of things, Lake Eureka, which I jokingly dubbed OB Fest, but really that course is so difficult and so roped that to see Ricky Wysocki absolutely masterfully dissect it, one out of bounds stroke in 36 holes there, the rest of the field. The rest of the 172-player field totaled 1,901 OB strokes. The average per player OBs at Lake Eureka on Saturday and Sunday was 11 per player. Ricky Wysocki only had one. And that was a huge factor in him being able to take down this tournament. He absolutely looked in control the whole time. You know, power and finesse, I think, was the amazing part. And it was really on display on, you know, just even on the final hole. His tee shot on the final hole that he absolutely smashed, perfectly, you know, caressed kind of the ceiling of the trees and just got so far out there that it wasn't even an issue. And he did that so many times. We really saw him kind of return to form this weekend. It was really exciting. I want to, you know, and again, I'm going to kind of try and speed things up a little bit this week because you probably don't want to listen to me talk the entire time. And, you know, hopefully you watch Ledgestone. But I do want to throw a couple of kind of interesting trends and stats out there for Ricky. So we saw him come back earlier this season, not playing so well. Now, since July, he has not finished outside the top five. His worst finish since July is fourth place. He has three wins now in that span. And this is including the Silver Cup, the Severn Lang Memorial, both of which he won, D-Glow, where he came in second, Idlewild, where he came in fourth, and now his win at Ledgestone. His average round rating for those five tournaments is 1052. His current player rating is 1047. So he's averaging five points over his rating right now for the last five tournaments. And he just looks healthy. He looks healthy, and that's really important. Having a healthy Riki Waisaki is very good for disc golf. It made Paul McBeth have to push real hard to try and make the comeback this time. It was kind of a turnabout from Pro Worlds last year, which was a fun little twist with Riki being the one who was giving chase last year. This year it was Paul. No way he was going to be able to catch up with Riki throwing down a 1,200 par final round. Paul really just struggled, I think, too much at Northwoods the first couple rounds. Only went 500 par the two rounds at Northwood total. And really, when you go into Eureka trailing, it's hard to make up strokes there with all the OB. You have a little lack of precision or get a little bit more aggressive out of necessity, and there's going to be some trouble. McBeth had five OB throws there at Eureka, which actually is not that bad, comparatively speaking, but compared to Ricky's one, that's four shots right there. You throw in a couple missed putts and Riki doing his thing, and it is what it is. So this is our third tournament in a row. We haven't seen McBeth win. I took him last week thinking, hey, he's not going to lose three in a row. He definitely, showed better, I think, this tournament than the last couple. And we'll go up into the Northeast now and really, really throw down. But gosh, I hope to see more of these classic Riki and Paul battles because they're the best. They're so fun. And we haven't really seen a lot of them the last couple years. So it's nice to get back to that. Let's talk about our recurring Chris Dickerson segment. Hat tip to some of the dudes over at UDisc for coining the term Dicker Sunday, because holy cow, Chris Dickerson and Sundays now are like peas and carrots or, baseball and apple pie and all those other good pairings. Chris Dickerson, another tremendous final round flourish out at Lake Eureka, an 11 under par final to move up into third place. At one point, he was almost bogey-free through almost the whole front nine. Slowed down a little bit, but they moved the cameras over to him on the broadcast. And, this is just one of those things where it's like, I love it. I love Chris Dickerson on Sunday. I want to see Chris Dickerson put himself just a little bit better the rest of these tournaments, so that maybe on Sunday he's not coming from the chase card or coming from the third card and having to lob these magical performances, but instead maybe be in contention from the jump. Because if you put him there and he can throw an 11 under par and Paul McBeth throwing a 12 under par or a 13 under par, I'm sorry, to try and chase Riki, that just doubles the pressure there and that makes it even more fun. I think what did in Chris Dickerson was just round two at Northwood, couldn't really put much together. Three straight bogeys to start. He actually played three over par second round at Northwood. Surprising for him being such a proficient technical player. But really shifted his fortunes over at Lake Eureka. Only two OBs each round. He went a combined 20 under par at Lake Eureka and moved up into third place. So nicely done for Chris Dickerson. My last MPO observation. Man, I was getting really excited about my top five pick of Anthony Barella coming through when he made lead card on Sunday. But unfortunately, I think we still are seeing some youth out of Anthony Barella. So much potential for this kid. Having watched him in person at the Challenge at Goat Hill earlier, which he won, and just seeing his skills in general. Can throw a mile forehand and backhand. Has a really smooth putt when it's on, but it seems like maybe you put the cameras on him, plus a little bit of trying to push the point of making up some strokes on Sunday. And again, it ended up in, he was the headliner of OB Fest on Sunday. Eight shots out of bounds. And then just, you know, several missed putts. Two missed putts in the circle. But really, I don't fault the kid. He's still super young. And I think just with more time and more experience and more consistency, we're going to see great things out of him. He is a treat to watch. Just an absolute talent physically. So as soon as he gets it all together upstairs, I think, and really can continue, you know, to improve, I think we're going to see really, really solid, exciting things out of him. He destroys Northwoods. He's played Northwoods so well. I shouldn't say destroy, but I mean, you know, he plays really solid there. He did that during Pro Worlds too. It was really Eureka that kind of did him in. So, you know, hopefully he can start to refine some of the string line game. Also, extra shout out to Greg Barsby, who we saw perform really well, get a lot of lead card love this weekend. It was fun. It was a really good tournament. I know there were a lot of backups. The broadcast was a little bit longer, a little bit slower as a result. Hopefully that can get cleaned up. Where things were not longer and slower was over on the FPO side. Scoring City over at Sunset Hills with Katrina Allen doing the best scoring over the weekend with a 24 under par total. This is her fifth career win at the Ledgestone. It did get slightly interesting. She was up by 10 or so going into the final round. And, no, let me think. Math is hard right now. I apologize. she was up by quite a few. Ended up winning by 3 after Paige Pierce tossed an 11 under par final round to Katrina's 3 under par. So made up 8 strokes. So she was up 11 over Paige. Needed almost all of them. Paige just absolutely went on a tear. But the biggest thing I really liked seeing out of Katrina Allen this weekend was just she was kind of getting that swagger back a little bit. Her circle one putting, which is still not super ideal, she was still 15% improved on her season average. 67% for the weekend. Her season average is 52. So ticking up there. But really, I think this was an important tournament for her because, you know, she alluded to it, and I don't know the whole story, but she alluded to it in her post-round interview that this was a tournament where some stuff happened last year, and I think this was interpersonal stuff with some other people on the course that really just sapped her confidence. And then, you know, she came out and was playing decently at Worlds and again, struggled with the putter there when they went back in August after the June Ledgestone. So to see her go back here and kind of put some demons to rest, I think, is very important. You know, we've talked a lot this season about how talented she is, but that she's struggling with her composure on the putting green. But I was really impressed with, you know, all the pressure that Paige Pierce is applying on Sunday. And Katrina Allen is still hanging out, talking to fans, looking relaxed, juggling golf balls. She was doing this the whole weekend. I think this is, hopefully this is her turning a corner and getting back to that really elite level of play. She's hopefully going to join the show next week once Sarah's back. I want Sarah to be back for that interview because I know they're good friends. And we've got a little bit of downtime before the next real big tournament. So we'll have hopefully a Ricky interview this week and a Kat interview next week. Paige Pierce, too little too late this week, but man, really, really impressive stuff that final round. Bogey free, threw in an eagle, obviously running some long putts, third round, almost aced hole 18. I wonder, you know, and again, looking at her stats, first in fairway hits, first in park shots, first in circle two in regulation, she's still doing her Paige Pierce thing, but the first couple rounds, not quite as clean, couple missed putts. I kind of wonder if, you know, the four round tournament last year at Worlds, and again, I keep making these comparisons just because it was in Peoria, and I know, you know, they played four rounds here at Sunset this weekend, but only three rounds at Sunset for Worlds last year, with two of them being at Northwood. But I wonder, you know, last year she staked out, or I'm sorry, she didn't stake out. She fell back like seven strokes early and was still had enough time to come back and win her fifth world title. I wonder if a little bit of that crept in, where maybe, all right, the scoring was a little bit slower the first couple rounds, two under par. Well, you know, I've got a couple rounds left to do my thing, but Katrina Allen didn't give her much chance to do that thing until the final day, when, you know, the lead was just insurmountable. Katrina's going 9 under par two rounds in a row at Sunset Hills is very impressive. On my last kind of observation here on the FPOs, one of the big differences was just the control. I know we said Paige Pierce was first in fairway hits, but that actually, I believe, tied with Katrina Allen. Yeah, they both had 82% fairway hits. Where they did have some differences was on the OB. 11 OBs for Paige Pierce, only 6 for Katrina Allen. So she had a little five stroke head start, which obviously came in very handy. Heather Young, continuing to impress. This was her a third place finish for her after a really, really strong final round. 6 under par, 984 rated on Sunday, kind of helped her stave off Haley King. And this was Heather Young's highest career finish on the Disc Golf Pro Tour. And man, she did it with scrambling and hitting some putts from circle two. Like, she's not lighting up the stats page you know, too much. She's 23rd in park shots, you know, 22nd in circle one in regulation, but leading the field in scrambling and hitting 10 putts outside the circle to really keep her in it. So as long as she can keep doing that, I wasn't expecting this to be her kind of tournament, just because I think so far we've seen her really excel in the woods. To see her come out to a little bit more of an open placement style course and perform this well, I think is very, very encouraging, and just kind of lends credence to the fact that, you know, she's really going to continue to be a player in the FPO field if she keeps it up. And let's remember, she's still only, I want to say, 18. So between her, Haley King, and Valerie Mondoano going 3, 4, 5, dang, man, we have an arrival of young talent in the FPO field, and it's really, really exciting, and I hope it continues, because you know, again, we've had this like de facto kind of top three for the last few years with Kat and Paige and Sarah Hokum, and they're fantastic and they're going to continue to be strong competitors. But, you know, let's talk about a 2021 season where hopefully COVID is no longer a thing and we've got regular FPO fields that have Katrina Allen, Paige Pierce, Sarah Hokum, Heather Young, Haley King, Valerie Mondoano, and then, oh yeah, Kristin Tatar and Evelina Salonen and Hanna Blomroos over from Europe. And you throw in, you know, a healthy Vanessa Van Dyken, an Ellen Widboom breakout season here, Jennifer Allen playing when she can, Owen Scoggins playing when she can. I mean, I haven't even mentioned Missy Gannon in this mix, who in her own right has had a breakout this year. Jessica Weiss, who's normally pretty solid, although she did struggle a little bit. But I've just rattled off about 10 or 12 names who could make up a very, very strong top three cards every weekend in the FPO field. And that is, man, that's very exciting. All right, I'm going to take a break real quick. And when we come back, we will do the Birdie Fuel Coffee Hot Rounds. So I'll be back here in just a moment. Thanks for listening. This is PDGA Radio. All right, welcome back to the program. The winner of the Ledgestone Insurance Open and a big old fat paycheck, Ricky Wysocki. Rick, how's it going, man? Congrats on the big win this weekend. How are you doing?
I'm doing amazing. It's just been a lot of hard work, a lot of dedication, a lot of willpower on my part to get myself to where I am and today, and able to win big tournaments like I'm used to doing. So I'm happy overall and excited for what the future holds for Sockybomb.
Obviously, I mean, you've had some wins the past couple weeks. I know you had Silver Cup and Severin Lang and everything, but I didn't realize it had been since SFO last year. Like, did it feel that long to you on the bigger stage?
Well, yeah, I mean, so I guess, you know, I didn't really know either. I mean, I did miss the back end of last year,
right,
and obviously the beginning, you know, so yeah, it has been, it's definitely felt like it's been a lot longer than it should have been, for sure, from in my eyes. But yeah, it's I think it's a lot to do with the Lyme disease, and not really being able to compete 100%. Like in Vermont, I played Vermont, but it wasn't really at like 100%. Then I missed USDGC, and I missed all the tournaments leading up to that. So I missed a good amount of tournaments, and then Waco, Arizona. So there's a lot of tournaments that I played. That I wasn't even at all, even close to 100%, not even like at all. I was just sick completely, and I was, you know, inhibited. So that's, as a competitor, that's, you know, it's tough to really swallow the pill that you don't have a chance to win. But that's basically where I was at, because I was so sick and I just wanted to compete. So not, you know, I think that, you know, that's just the sign of that. And now that I'm healthy, and it's a direct correlation to my game.
I mean, you kind of took some of the questions out of my mouth there. I was going to ask, I mean, so clearly earlier in the season, you just weren't, this year at least, you weren't ready yet. How much did that, how much did kind of the shutdown then like help you?
Yeah, no, I totally was not ready. I should not have even, honestly, I shouldn't have played at all. Because, you know, if I'm not ready to play 100%, I should just not play. There's a big difference between being 100% ready and just not playing good, and then being 50% ready and then, you know, still not playing good. You know, there's a huge difference there. But anyways, yeah, the quarantine, the shutdown was like a blessing in disguise for me, because after Waco, I basically told myself, I go, yeah, you know, like I'm not ready to play right now. Like I'm not going to be competing. So I literally said that like round one or two of Waco, I was like, I was just thinking about pulling out of the tournament. I'm like,
so you would have been shutting it down anyway.
Exactly. I was literally like, that's what I'm saying. It was a blessing in disguise. I was done. I was going to call it quits until I got healthy. Just make a little, you know, take a couple months off. I knew that I was real close to being healthy, but I wasn't there yet. And so I was just going to say, yeah, take a couple months off and come back and regroup once you're ready to go. But yeah, like I was just, so yeah, I was like, this doesn't bother me at all. Like for me personally, I didn't get affected at all really by the shutdown. I gave me time to get healthy when there was tournament. If there was tournaments going on, I wouldn't have been able to play them anyway. So it didn't set me back at all. So I really looked at the shutdown as, you know, there wasn't a negative at all for me in my situation,
right,
that I was dealing with. So yeah, I was actually kind of pumped about it. The fact that I didn't have to miss any tournaments, you know,
tournaments
were getting canceled and stuff. I'm like, oh, cool. Well, I was actually, in a weird way, I was actually kind of happy because I didn't miss them. Nobody really knew what I was going through. And, you know, whereas if they were happening and I wasn't playing, people would be like, what's going on? You know?
So we're obviously, I want to talk about Ledgestone, but since we're kind of on the subject, like you and I haven't really gotten to talk much about about the Lyme disease and about how much you battled. So, I mean, like how, you know, at the worst last year, like, if you don't mind talking about this, like how much weight did you lose? How rough was it going for you at the low point?
Yeah, so super long story, but I'll keep it quick for the podcast. But basically, I got it in Europe, and I got diagnosed in Vermont, and then I drove immediately back home because I knew it was going to be a really long process to get myself back healthy. And so I stayed with my sister, and she was basically my caregiver and everything. But basically, the long story short is I had zero energy, so my energy level was this. I would lay on the couch all day long, 24/7. And I'd get up, and this is just what Lyme disease does to you. I would get up, and go have food, make dinner or whatever, and go. And then I'd have to immediately go back on the couch. I'd be just gassed. I would have no energy, no nothing. And so I did that for about 1 month after Vermont. Like during USDGC, that was what I did. I remember sitting on the couch and watching USDGC, all the scores and stuff, and I could not leave the couch. I was just sleeping and I would stand up and I would get dizzy and almost faint and pass out. And then I'd have to sit back down so I didn't fall over and pass out, literally. And then after that process went away, then it started going into my joints. And so my joints I would wake up one day and I would not be able to move my fingers. It felt like they were completely frozen. And I literally woke up crying one day because my fingers were completely locked. I couldn't move them at any point. I could not move them an inch.
Dang.
I felt like they were completely frozen solid. And I literally started crying. I was like, yeah, I'm never going to play disc golf ever again, is what I said. And so that was a traumatizing experience for me, and just going through all the fact, you know, all the process of what Lyme can do. It's, and it's random for everybody, but this is just the process that I went through. And yeah, insomnia, they never slept. So I had all these inflamed joints that I couldn't sleep, and, you know, I couldn't do nothing. And so it was just the most miserable, you know, time of my life by a long shot. It's not even close. And on top of that, I lost 20 pounds. I don't, you know, as you guys all know, most people know I'm pretty skinny.
I was going to say, have 20 to lose, man.
No, I did not have 20 to lose. And I was like sickly. I saw people that didn't see me before I got healthy, and they literally thought like I had cancer or something. It would look that bad. I was like a skeleton. So I dropped from like my weight was like 180. And I dropped to 160. I'm 6'4", 160. Cause you can imagine that.
Wow.
And that was deathly sick.
What are you at now?
And it was for no reason. I'm at 190 right now, so okay. I'm at a really healthy weight. So that's for me. That's a good weight for me. 190, 195. But yeah, I was eating everything. I was eating like really clean food. I was eating vegetables, and I was still eating burgers and steak and stuff. But I was not gaining a pound. Like I said, the Lyme disease just affects you so everybody so differently.
And now I
and that's what's so detrimental about it.
Yeah. Now I mean I know there was. You know, you took a little bit of a more unconventional treatment approach to it, at least as far as, you know, as I understand it, you didn't use traditional antibiotics, right? You went a more holistic approach, right?
Yep. Yeah, basically. Yep, exactly.
What was what was the reasoning behind doing that? I know it obviously it proved to be a little bit controversial, I think, at the time.
Yeah. No, for sure. And just so you know how it is, any big decision like that, people are just looking out for me. And I appreciate the fact that people are like wanting to look out for me. But I'm glad you asked this question, actually, because, basically how my thought process was, I went to the doctors and got their research, got what they had to say. Then I worked with my buddy, who's a disc golfer, who had it, who's a nutritionist, who's had it for 10 years, who has, that's the guy that I've ended up deciding to work with. But basically, with Lyme disease, what happens is if you, the doxycycline, what they give you to knock out the Lyme is most successful if you catch Lyme disease within 72 hours of getting it. When I caught it, I was at like a month. So basically that takes me like, so the doxy has like a huge percentage of, I'm not sure what it is, but it's a really high percentage of it killing the Lyme if you take it within 72 hours. And it's very minimal if you wait until after. So I decided to not take it because it was basically like a month after. It was way after the time period where it would actually be the most effective.
Right.
So then I had to take the next step and go with, all right, well, here's my next step is I'm not going to take the medicine because it's not going to be, it wasn't within the 72 hours. So now I'm going to go with the health and wellness program supplements. I'm going to go with change my diet completely, add supplements into my routine. And so all this different stuff, support my immune system so that way my immune system can then fight it and kill the Lyme disease itself. So basically that's where I'm at today is I'm so healthy. And so my body is so optimized from this health and wellness game plan for my nutritionist and all the supplements and all the stuff that I'm doing for my body. Then my body is just completely fighting Lyme disease and it's at bay basically.
Okay.
And it's not going to be exposed. And so that's why there's no symptoms, there's no nothing, because I'm so healthy from the game plan that I have found out through my nutritionist.
I mean, I'm sure you saw some of the comments and things that people would leave.
I mean,
there were people who thought you were crazy or like anti-science and stuff. Like, was
no.
How was it dealing with that through the process then?
Yeah. Well, it's just like anything. It's just people have a lack of knowledge is why they're making that decision. Because they don't realize what all the different variables that went into my decision. You know, it wasn't like, oh, hey, I'm not going to take this medicine because and it's just going to, I'm going to let the Lyme, you know, get worse and, you know, have all these crazy symptoms. Yeah, I knew, obviously, like if I caught it within 72 hours, I probably would have taken the medicine, which would have been the most effective. And that's the most effective way to kill it. But unfortunately, I didn't. So I had to go a different route. Something that was going to be more successful and more successful in the long term because I caught it a lot later than most people do. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah,
I was in Europe.
Yeah.
I was on tour. And so So just the fact that people didn't have the knowledge of my actual case of what was going on was a little frustrating. So
it doesn't sound like you probably had a lot of. It doesn't sound like you had a lot of energy at the time to really be.
Yeah.
Pushing back.
No, I had none. Like I said, no, exactly. I had none. I had literally none. I had no physical energy to even get off the couch, let alone to argue and deal with people that have no idea what was going on. I mean, I thought. I mean, it felt like my life was over, honestly. It was just depressed. I mean, I didn't even go into the emotional stuff, depressing stuff. I mean,
right.
It affects your emotional and your mental, and it's crazy. Yeah. It affects, like I said, it's the worst thing I've ever experienced in my life and by a long shot, and I don't wish it upon anybody. And it's unfortunately it's prevalent in a lot of disc golf courses, especially on the East Coast. And it's horrible.
Well, I was going to say, there have been a couple other, I think, obviously, Cale Laviska has battled it before, Johnny McRae, more recently, guy like Brody Smith. Have you talked to any other players who have maybe dealt with it and like, have you guys, like, exchanged advice or anything like that?
Yeah, no, that's another great question. Yeah, I talked to Brody, and I kind of, I was talking to him a little bit at, I think, D-Glow. I'm kind of asking him, I forget what tournament it was, but one of the tournaments after he got diagnosed. But I kind of asked him, and it sounded like he caught it within the time frame to where Doxy was the most efficient.
Right.
And so I think he took that and maybe and kind of knocked it out a lot quicker than maybe I did.
I recall like Cale did that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So and like I said, I'm not against science. I'm not against medicine. I'm not against any of that. I think it's, if you have Lyme, take it and knock it out and be done with it. But for me, I didn't have that luxury because I didn't show symptoms like most people do. Most people show symptoms way sooner than I did, So unfortunately it was so long, prolonged process that it was already like the Lyme disease had already been festering in my body. And so I had to go a different route, but every time someone comes to me for advice, I basically tell them, if you catch it in time, you don't want to wait till you have to deal with all the stuff that I had to deal with because I waited too long. And it wasn't that I waited too long. It was just that the Lyme didn't show up until it was too late. You see what I'm saying? So the Lyme got introduced to my body. I pulled off the tick. I didn't think anything happened and I was fine for a month or two later.
Yeah. Cause you didn't start to really feel bad until GMC, right?
Until GMC, which is like 2 months later.
Right.
And so that the Lyme had been introduced through the tick, and then 2 months goes by and then the Lyme is just festering and just growing in my body. And that was the biggest problem. That's why I had all these inflammation, insomnia, and all these crazy problems from that, is because I waited because I didn't know anything was wrong, until I reached a breaking point. And then I was like, oh wow. And that's why it took so much longer for me to actually heal. It took me almost a year, honestly.
Yeah.
To fully heal.
Are you at 100%? Do you feel like you're at 100% now, or are there any like other things that flare up?
Yeah, no, it's like I said, I think like Preserve was the last tournament. I didn't really play that well. That was the last tournament I really felt something. And that was like a month or two ago. And so since then, it was like 2 months ago. Yeah, since then I'm 100%. There's no going back. I can almost guarantee that. I can never be 100%, but I'm 99.9% sure that you will not see me with limping around or having a flare up, because I'm so strict with my diet and so strict with everything now that it's not going to be flaring up or anything. And I'm not, I'm so strict on everything for good reason.
So let's shift it back to Ledgestone then. I think obviously this was a completely dominant performance front to back. You had to take on not just Northwood, but obviously Lake Eureka. I want to ask you real quick, how many between, there were 172 players in the field. So give me your best guess. Two rounds at Lake Eureka, total amount of out-of-bounds strokes for the field.
I like that. That's going to be a fun one. For 172 players?
172 players, two rounds. I got the number. I want to know your guess.
Okay, the top players, let's see. So the top half, I'll split it up into two. I'm just going to do some quick math. Top half is probably going to go OB average four times around. So let's say eight. So I'm going to say per round OBs, I'd say 500.
You're about per round. You got to almost double it. So total OBs, total OBs for the two rounds. Unless I did my math wrong, or unless I looked at
no,
wrong.
No, you're probably right. Honestly.
It was 1902.
Oh my god!
And you know how many of those you had, right?
I think I only contributed to what, one of them?
You had only one of them.
Oh my gosh, that is amazing. That's crazy.
So I mean, what was the, you know, what was the magic there for you? Yeah. Round four, 947 OBs. Round three, 955.
That's insane.
So I mean, what were you able to do there, man? That where you were only able to get one OB. I mean, that's incredible.
I think it's a direct sign of me just honestly being healthy, being confident in my game. I think I was in a flow state. Like, I was in rhythm. I was in flow. Like, you see NBA players, you see, like, players that, like, they march down the court and you can tell they're going to make the three before they make it. For me, it was like I knew I was going to birdie the hole before I stepped up to it. So it was being in that flow rhythm throughout the whole tournament. Not just one round, not just a couple holes, not just the front nine, but the entire tournament. I was in that flow state. I was in my rhythm, and I wasn't letting anything break that. And so just having that mental mindset of, yeah, this is my flow, this is my rhythm. And I may get a, you know, I think I had three bogeys on the week. And that was three or four, I think, I believe, right around there.
At Eureka, I believe it was.
At Eureka, yeah.
Yeah, Eureka, you had three.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, it was just me being in that mindset and allowing my body and everything to reset after the bogeys and not let it transfer into the next hole, which sometimes in the past, if my mental game isn't as strong, it may leak into the next hole and cost me a stroke on the next hole because I'm so flustered on the next hole. So just the fact that I was even keeled, staying in that flow state, and having my body optimized health through my health and wellness, through my supplements, supplying my brain power, my mental focus and stamina, all the different things that I'm doing for the Lyme disease is not only just for the Lyme disease, it's to optimize my body so I can feel how I've been feeling this weekend throughout the whole tournament and throughout the rest of my career, honestly. So these are all changes for my health and wellness game plan that I'm doing with the supplements and diet that are going to affect me in the positive way throughout my rest of my career. Like I said, and that's something to where take something traumatizing like this for me to make the change, but it's going to be for the better in the long run. And now that I'm past all that, I am so excited to really see how this is all going to turn out and how I'm going to be playing. And I feel like I can do that on a consistent basis now, which is a great feeling as a player and competitor to be able to play at a high level consistently and feel like I can do that week in and week out.
What's how much was Worlds last year on your mind?
It was on there. If anything, I'm always a glass half full kind of person. So obviously it's easy for some people to say, you know, I lost and whatever, but in my mindset, I was thinking about my last two rounds. I went course record.
I was going to say, you blasted it. You damn near pulled it off. Yeah.
So the fact that I played so solid on these two courses, that's the momentum I was taking in. I wasn't thinking about how I lost. I was thinking about my last two rounds that I played out here were course record 14 under at Eureka, and then I think it was like 11 or 12 under at Northwoods. I forget which one it was, but it was a really good score. And so those both got me in contention to haven't had a chance to win. And so that's what my mindset was going in there. And then also on top of that, I was trying to get revenge and not give anyone a chance, no matter who it was, to even sniff the lead. Once I got it, I was basically, that was my mindset once I got that big lead.
And you had a visitor, right? Lauri Markkanen from the Bulls came out and watched. Uh-huh. How did that kind of come together? Kind of tell me about that experience. How did that go?
Yeah, no, that was really cool. So yeah, Lauri, he was basically our relationship just kind of started on Instagram. I think I sent him a message or he sent me a message. I forget. I think I sent him a message a while ago because I saw he was disc golfing. And then it took him like, I don't know, it took him a while to respond or whatever. And so he finally responded, and he was right around, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. And he's like, yeah, I'm thinking about coming out to Ledgestone and all this stuff. So we were kind of pen-palling back and forth or whatever. And so we were going back and forth, and he was like saying how he's got all his team practices. He lives in Chicago, and he wants to make a day trip on Saturday to Ledgestone. So I'm like, oh, cool. I was trying to get him to caddy for me actually for a while.
Oh, nice.
He ended up just following some groups around. He watched some holes of mine. He watched some holes, I think, of Paul. And so he came out. And, yeah, he's a big disc golf fan. He's from Finland, so his brother's a professional soccer player. He plays disc golf also. And he came out to support. He watches all the Jomez videos, watches all this, all the coverage on YouTube. He's honestly a big fan. He just loves disc golf, loves the sport. And he came out to support me, and he gave me a Chicago Bulls, his jersey, personal game-worn jersey that he signed. And I swapped him out. I gave him some of my DGPT cards, some one of my T-Bird 3s, some of my cool Stocky Bomb stamp discs, and gave him a little cool little swag bag full of stuff. And so we kind of swapped that way and kind of talked, hung out, and he said he wants to get me some tickets next year when the Bulls play, so I'm going to go support him and watch one of his games. So it was awesome to share that relationship with him and kind of show him me and my nature on the disc golf course, and he really appreciated that, I think, being a top level athlete also.
Yeah, man. I got a couple follow ups on this. Number one, does he know you're a Cavs fan?
He does, actually. I think he did say something about seeing a post or something. I think he did, actually. So he did notice that. He did call me out on it. So yeah, it didn't go unnoticed for sure.
All right. follow up number two. Did Paul get a Bulls jersey?
I don't know about that, actually, honestly. I know I didn't see a post or anything, so I if it didn't happen in my eyes, if I didn't see a post, it's pretty adult. He might have. I'm not sure. I know he followed Paul, but I didn't see a jersey, so I do feel a little special in that way.
We'll find out. And then, okay, yeah, so where does this one – I know you've had a couple other celeb interactions. I remember the Aaron Rodgers story. Where's this one rank for you?
On the store, as far as what
so as celebrities you've been able to come across somehow.
Oh yeah, no, this is awesome. It's funny, my buddy actually the Chicago White Sox, he pitches for the White Sox, Dylan Cease, his name is, he's in the starting rotation,
right?
But he's also from the White Sox, so I don't know, something about Chicago sports, they love their disc golf there, I guess. he's definitely up there. I mean, my buddy Steven Wonderboy Thompson, he's a UFC fighter. He's up there, but I think it's cool. Honestly, I think he's probably the coolest one. But it's crazy to see all the all these top athletes really liking disc golf, taking note of it, and really enjoying it, and kind of seeing it as a professional sport. And respecting it. I think that's a huge sign for our sport and how it's growing and everything going on with it. And so I think that that's a direct correlation to the growth of the sport. And so that's. And I'm just glad to be a face of it and be right there in the front and center to represent it.
Yeah, for sure, man. All right, so now, obviously, the tour is moving up to Vermont for the Green Mountain Championship. We got a couple weeks, but there are, some quarantine rules and regulations in place. So what's your plan? Are you going to Vermont? I saw you were golfing today.
Yeah, I was golfing. I was playing ball. I had a fun casual round. But yeah, I'm on my way to Vermont actually right now to do the 2-week quarantine. So
are you just going to stay at Smuggs for 2 weeks?
Yeah, I'm going to actually stay at Airbnb, but yeah, real close to Smuggs.
Nice.
And do the 2-week quarantine, and that's going to be just chill, abide by whatever regulations the DGPT has. And that makes me eligible for the Green Mountain and MVP because they're both states are strict.
Okay. So how, obviously you have traditionally played very well at GMC. Is it pretty much just going to be like practice or bust for the next 2 weeks up there then?
Yeah, basically I'm going to practice a lot. Yeah, like you said, I've won the Green Mountain Championship 4 times back when it was a big A tier. And so yeah, I have a lot of experience out there. I play those courses really well. And I'm in great shape mentally and physically to play really well. And so I think it's all about, me being in the right mindset. And so deep down, I truly feel like I am in a great mindset and I can be the best player best soccer bomb I can ever be is right now, honestly. So I think that's a great feeling for me, is just keeping that mindset, keeping my health and wellness game plan on point. And that allows me to do what I do best and compete at the top level. And so that's what I'm going to be focusing on. And, yeah, everything else will fall into place, and that's where I'm at.
All right, one last quick question before I let you go, Rick. That big nice crystal trophy that you got from over the
Yeah.
weekend. Did you drink or eat anything out of it yet?
I have not. It's in the van, but it's something to where I definitely feel like I should. And now that you mentioned it, I might have to get a video and tag you or something in
I was gonna
it.
say, I don't know what your I'm not sure what your dietary plan will be
Yeah.
if you can work something in, but man, I feel like
Yeah,
that's an
no, I know.
opportunity.
I need to make an exception for that, I feel like.
Well, Rick, hey man, it's great seeing you back on top and healthy, man. I think that's the biggest thing. Like, I think a lot of people, myself included, were really worried about you just as a human. So it's great to see you back.
Yeah.
Thanks for the time and enjoy your quarantine up there in Vermont, man.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you having me on the podcast.
Of course. All right, that was Ricky Wysocki. We'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. Welcome back, and no big surprises here that all of the Birdie Fuel Coffee hot rounds came from the Ledgestone Insurance Open. Let's start it out on the FPO side with Emily Beach coming in with a 974, almost 975 rated final round, moving her into ninth place. Heather Young, we mentioned it earlier, 984 final round to take third. Haley King, her 987 rated second round helped her to get to a fourth place finish. Katrina Allen's second round came in rated at 1014, and that Paige Pierce scorcher in the final round was rated at 1031. Yikes. All right, over on the MPO side, again, all from the Ledgestone Insurance Open. Kevin Jones with a 1077 rated opener over at Northwood. He staked out a really strong lead. We didn't really talk about Kevin Jones that much this weekend. I was actually surprised to see him not perform as well at Lake Eureka as he did the last couple seasons. I was doing a little bit of stats research, you know, the night after Northwood before the players moved over to Lake Eureka. And of the four players who were going to be on the lead card, it was going to be Ricky Wysocki, Greg Barsby, Kevin Jones, and Andrew Presnell. Kevin Jones had the second best OB rate compared. Well, I mean, in terms of number of holes, Presnell had him edged out just slightly. But Kevin Jones had a fantastic OB rate over at Lake Eureka and you know, a couple top five showings. Still a top five here this weekend on the whole. So another strong weekend for Kevin Jones. But I was surprised. I expected to see him push a little bit more. But I think we're really starting to see that he is a very well-rounded game. When you can go from, you know, Northwood to Lake Eureka and finish top five, I think that says a lot about you as your entire skill set. So I am still disappointed we didn't get to see Eagle at this tournament. It would have been fun. All right, anyway, fourth hottest rated round on the MPO side. Let's keep an eye out for Kyle Klein, 2019 U.S. Amateur Champion, also 2019 Next Generation Disc Golf Tour Champion. This kid is going to be something special. He logged a 10 under par final round that was rated at 1078, helped him move up 35 places on the leaderboard at Lake Eureka. He ended up tying for 21st, so maybe it doesn't look like the most impressive there, but being able to throw down that round at Lake Eureka is going to be impressive for anybody. So props to Kyle Klein. I'm going to give him the Hot Rounds Player of the Week shout out. Chris Dickerson, 1084, round four, to come in third place. Ricky Wysocki's final round was rated at 1091, and Mr. Paul McBeth trying his best to chase down Ricky Wysocki, but not able to do it, still tossed almost an 1100 rated round, 1098, as he came in second place. Once again, the Birdie Fuel Coffee Hot Rounds are brought to you by, yes, Birdie Fuel Coffee. Head over to birdiefuelcoffee.com, use the code PDGARadio at checkout. Get 10% off your order. Support our show by picking up a bag of Hot Round or support one of your favorite professional players. You can do it all over at birdiefuelcoffee.com. We don't have a lot else in the show today because Sarah's not here, so we're not going to do run it or layup. I don't really, you know, what am I going to do, debate myself? That's like, I could do that. It might be a little schizophrenic, but I could do it. I do want to bring a bit of news into the mix. This is over. Shout out to our friends over at UltiWorld Disc Golf, who, by the way, have been churning out some really, really strong content on their newsletter. It's called Cashline. It's written by the publisher, Charlie Eisenhood, and it really all looks at kind of the business of disc golf. He had articles recently on the kind of explosion and collector market of the Nate Sexton Firebird, a follow-up on disc golf sports agents, and you know, a look at the live coverage success for the Disc Golf Pro Tour. So check those out over at Aussie World Disc Golf. But this piece of news came today, and we kind of talked about it. We alluded to it last week, but it's looking pretty official that for players now on the Disc Golf Pro Tour to go to the Green Mountain Championship, there is going to be a 14-day quarantine required for these players who come into Vermont. Or they have to have a 7-day quarantine plus verification of a negative test for COVID-19. So the Pro Tour is holding people to this. Jeff Spring says that they are going to provide the option to create a player bubble at Smuggler's Notch. The tour will kind of help subsidize the cost of. But Jeff Spring did say that he expects most players to kind of quarantine at home and then head to Vermont. So what the options are here is, you know, go to Vermont now, quarantine for 14 days. Go to Vermont in a week, get a COVID test, come up negative, and quarantine for a week. Or quarantine at home for 14 days and then go straight to Vermont. Apparently they're allowing that. So there are options here for the players. And Jeff Springs, the tour director, says that he expects most people will just quarantine at home. But it will be interesting to see if this impacts the field at all at the Green Mountain Championship. We still do have more than 2 weeks. It starts on September 3rd. But this obviously had some impact on the schedule in general. That, you know, we had the MVP Open at Maple Hill end up changing its dates to push back. Basically, I think the way things are working in the Northeast is if you're up in most of the spots in the Northeast, they're considering you kind of safe. So I think the idea is if you do this quarantine for 2 weeks and then go to Smuggs, you can probably safely go from Smuggs to Massachusetts for the MVP Open at Maple Hill. But, you know, right now the field is 108 players at the Green Mountain Championship, notably missing from the list. And obviously this can change in a couple weeks, but notably missing right now is Eagle McMahon on the MPO side. The FPO side, all the standard bearers are there. So hopefully Eagle can make it and really add some more competition to that field. Simon Lazat will be back in play. You know, he was out. He kind of stayed over in Massachusetts the last couple weeks in that area. So we'll see. It should be an interesting mix the next couple weeks to see how some stuff goes. And I don't know, maybe we'll get some fun stories from inside the DGPT player bubble if one actually happens. So keep an eye out on that for the next couple weeks. Coming up this weekend, we're not going to do proper picks for this, but I just want to give a little shout out. The Pittsburgh Flying Disc Open is taking place this weekend out at Moraine State Park. This is in just outside Pittsburgh, obviously, Pennsylvania. This is one of my favorite courses to watch. I cannot wait to watch this tournament. As far as I understand, Central Coast Disc Golf will be covering it in post-production. There won't be any live coverage because it's not one of the proper tour events right now. It is an A-tier. But pretty solid field at the top. Garrett Gerthy, shout out to Andrew Fish, sometimes PDJ radio listener, very fun, active member of Disc Golf Twitter. Go get on Disc Golf Twitter, people, and yell at Fish, tell him to go. Philo Brathwaite, Chris Clemens, Nathan Queen, several other top players, and then a really solid 17-player women's field. Sarah Hokum, Kelsey Brakel, Jessica Weiss, Michelle Frazier, several others. So should be a fun tournament. We're not going to do picks, like I said, but our listener picks homie, Andrew Lockridge, did send in his picks, so I want to give him a shout-out. He's got Fish to win it and Chris Clemens in top five, and Katrina Allen for the win in FPO with Michelle Frazier coming in top five. However, I do think, here's what I think happened. I think Andrew sent me these picks over the weekend. I think Katrina won Ledgestone and she decided to take the weekend off because I don't see her on the list anymore. So Andrew, we'll just give you a mulligan on these picks. Speaking of the picks, I do have to say very quickly, Sarah closed the gap this week at Ledgestone. Holy cow. I went goose egg. I got 0 points across the board for Pearson Macbeth winning and Missy Gannon coming in 12th and Anthony Borella dropping down to 15th. So that was a bummer. And Sarah cleaned up. 2 points for Katrina Allen winning, 2 points for Ricky Wysocki winning, and 1 point for Nicola Castro finishing in the top five for a total of 7 points. She's now only 3 points behind me. Sam Spearing, our listener pick, fared just about as well as I did. Just got one top 5 point for Ricky Wysocki. So the current standings, Steve, 24 points. Sarah, 21 points. Listeners, 20 points. Our next listener picks will come for the Green Mountain Championship. So send those in to radio@pdga.com and we'll get you on the list. One other little kind of fun piece that I wanted to rant on before I go. For those of you who follow other sports, baseball, Major League Baseball has been going on. Fernando Tatis Jr. is a stud. He plays for my local team, the San Diego Padres. I'm not a Padres fan, so I'm not going to go in any defense of this or anything, but I am basically just want to kind of bring up a little discussion. So a little bit of a kerfuffle, because last night the Padres were up big. I don't even know the score. They were up by four, like 5 or 6 runs or something. And he swung at a 3-0 pitch and hit a grand slam. And apparently this was late in the game when the Padres were expected to win. And apparently this upset the Rangers manager who they were playing against. And it even upset Tatis' own manager on the Padres, because it was one of these quote unquote unwritten rules of baseball that you're not supposed to violate in terms of, you know, respect for the game and things like that. And I don't know, apparently they saw it as running up the score. My take on this: always run up the score, because I can speak to this as a San Francisco Giants fan. Our bullpen just blew two massive leads in the past 3 or 4 days. You don't ever want to not score runs, people. Like, this whole idea of unwritten rules is just silly to me. Let 21-year-old kids hit home runs and have fun and let the fans enjoy it. But it did also get me thinking one more thing. Are there any unwritten rules in disc golf that maybe we follow and either, you know, don't talk about or don't realize? I don't know. I was kind of struggling with this one, so I'm hoping listeners can maybe pitch in. Send me an email, radio@pdga.com, and tell me what you kind of think the unwritten rules, if there are any, of disc golf are. I think one of them might kind of be like the hesitance to call people on time violations or foot faults, some of those uncomfortable things that can happen on a card. I don't know if this falls in the same category of, like, don't run up the score, though. Like, if Ricky Wysocki, you know, should Ricky Wysocki still be smashing shots off the tee and trying to park holes with a 6 or 7 shot lead with 2 holes to play? Heck yeah, man. Just do it. Just win and play to win. That's my motto. Play to win. So anyway, that's my end of my rant for the show. Thank you for listening. Hopefully we will be back with another episode next week. Sarah, I think we'll be back on board, and hope, you know, you don't have to just listen to me. But if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to rate us over on iTunes, share it with your friends, and, you know, spread the good word of PDJ Radio. So until next week, I'm Steve Hill signing off. Be good to each other, and we'll talk to you soon.